Welcome to Vega's World! It's time to party, and I'm your most excellent host, JC Vega. Thank you all for tuning in. A lot of fun stuff to talk about this week. A lot of fun things have happened this week. One of those things being that this past Saturday night at Lola's Bar, I showed up for Mauro Pro Wrestling Return to Madness. I was not on the card. I did not have a match scheduled. I was just there to support friends. And let this be a lesson to you young wrestlers out there, or would-be wrestlers out there. If you are not on a show and you are physically able and willing, you bring your gear no matter what, because you never know when an opportunity may arise. And sure enough, my number was called. They needed somebody to fill a spot. I fulfilled it and entertained that crowd as only I can. One funny thing happened, though, on that entrance. I forgot it was a low ceiling. They reminded everybody that it was a low ceiling and to watch your head. And I come out to Walk Like an Egyptian. It's a cover of Walk Like an Egyptian by Merce and Holy Bread, collectively known as the Invincibles. So I was feeling it, revving myself up, feeling jacked and energized, trying to get the crowd into it, because your boy is a mean, clean baby face trying to get that crowd pumped. And I usually go to the second rope, headbang, and jump off. Well, I go to jump off, and I hit the television and the support beam to said Lola's Bar and Grill. I forgot the ceiling was low, and I have footage of it. I posted it on my Instagram and other socials. A friend of the show, co-host Aaron Nova, said he watched it about 158 times and laughed his head off, as did I. It's pretty funny. It looks like I hit my head, but I did not hit my head. It actually hit, like, the upper part of my shoulders. It was even funnier, though. The referee came up to me after that and was like, calm down. So that was pretty funny. Thank you for Mauro Pro for allowing me to be on the show. If you guys are ever around the Tampa Bay area and you have Mauro Pro Wrestling up for that weekend, you should go check them out. And hopefully your boy will be on another card sometime in the near future. But anyways, let's move on, shall we? For years now, we have heard of the film that was made by Warner Brothers for Looney Tunes. It was about the coyote suing Acme because none of their gadgets worked in his quest to capture the Roadrunner. This movie was starred Will Forte, John Cena, Lana Condor, PJ Bryan, Tone Bell, some pretty well-established comedy actors and some famous faces. But in some cost-cutting or cost-saving measures, Warner Brothers decided to shelve the movie as a tax write-off, because apparently that's a thing you could do in Hollywood. You can make a movie, and as long as you do not release that movie, you can use it as a tax write-off to recoup funds. So they shelved it in order to, you know, not have to spend money on the taxes for that. And everybody was wanting this movie to come out. This movie was supposed to come out in 2018, right? And for years, people have wanted, everybody on Twitter was asking for it. Some guy dressed up as the coyote and sat outside of the legitimate Warner Brothers Studios lot with a sign trying to get people to notice. And now, after all these years, we have someone who stepped up to buy the rights, the distribution rights for Coyote versus Acme. And that is Ketchup Entertainment. They have landed the distribution rights, and they have paid a cool $50 million for it. Now, for everyone's sake, I hope that this movie lives up to the hype. I hope it meets everybody's expectations. I hope it meets my expectations, because the premise sounds hilarious. Courtroom drama over the fact that the coyote could not capture the Roadrunner. And it's Looney Tunes, right? It's Space Jam is a nostalgia trip for me. It's something near and dear to my heart. I watched that movie a ton as a kid. And, you know, this movie does sound like it could be hilarious to watch. So I hope that it meets everyone's expectations and not everyone's disappointed. But the CEO of Ketchup Entertainment had this to say: "We're thrilled to have made a deal with Warner Brothers Pictures to bring this film to audiences worldwide. Coyote vs. Acme is a perfect blend of nostalgia and modern storytelling, capturing the essence of the beloved Looney Tunes characters while introducing them to a new generation. We believe it will resonate with both long-term fans and newcomers alike." And a continuum of Warner Brothers, DC has released a extended preview of Superman. And this clip showed a wounded Superman calling for Crypto showing up, being as any dog who's hyperactive and sees their owner for the first time in like, I don't know, 2 minutes, jumping all around him, you know, kissing him on the face and stuff. And Superman's like, please stop, stop, just help me. And Krypto's like, all right, hey man, I was happy to see you. Wait, what's going on? What's going on? I miss you, man. Just, you know, being a dog. And, you know, brings him back to the Fortress of Solitude. Androids help him out, give him in on a gurney, and get him a heavy dose of Yellow Sun. And all this felt like it came straight out of All-Star Superman. It's a story written by Grant Morrison, and it's one of the few Superman stories that I've read and I enjoyed, because I'm not really a big fan of Superman, and maybe that's because my only exposure to Superman was just from television and movies, and he has no stakes. I mean, he's just really super powered, and that's it. You know that nothing's really gonna hurt him, so it's just like, what's there to be invested in? But this Superman got his ass kicked, to put it mildly. So he's not going to be overpowered. There's going to be stakes involved in this, and there's going to be moments where he looks like he'll be in jeopardy. And again, this is my naivete to the character. I have not read a whole lot of Superman. Superman's not a character that's grasped my attention. I've seen Man of Steel. I enjoyed that for what it was and how it tried to modernize Superman, or as they thought it would help modernize Superman. And this will probably satisfy comic book fans. You know, James Gunn is a comic book guy himself. So, you know, we'll have to wait and see. But I from this clip alone, I'm interested, especially again because it reminded me of Grant Morrison's All-Star Superman. But that story also deals with the fact that Superman is dying from cancer because too much exposure to radiation from the sun, it's killed his cells, even though it gave him life, it's killing him. And we've already kind of got that kind of story in the Snyder DC universe. You know, Batman v Superman, we had Doomsday show up, so I hope we're not already going to the well of Superman's gonna die, guys. I don't think that would be the case. At least I would hope that would not be the case. James Gunn is a very savvy guy and knows his comic book stuff. And I don't think that you don't want to bring out a story where Superman dies in his first outing. But it just gives me that Superman, All-Star Superman vibes. And if we get that, then I will be there at the theater on opening weekend or close to it to watch with vested interest, because it looks good and this is going to be the first movie in the new DC universe as far as cinema goes. So, you know, you gotta hope that they knock that one out of the park. In other news, Predator Badlands had a sneak preview at CinemaCon 2025 in Las Vegas, Nevada. Elle Fanning was there to introduce the film, and this movie sounds interesting because it's gonna be centered on a predator who's been cast out and is working alongside humans, or at least one human. They haven't released the trailer to the public, but you know, reporters and all that were there and they've talked about it. Sounds interesting. I'm all for a hero predator and how that goes against what we know about predators in the lore as far as movies go and some comic books, but yeah, they're a hunter tribe. So it'll be interesting to see how this one plays out. I'm waiting for that one. Dan Trachtenberg is the director of this one. He's also directing another film, which I think is a sequel to Prey, and it's untitled. There's another animation one coming out soon. I think we talked about that a couple weeks ago. But I'm interested. I'm looking forward to that a lot. But let me tell you what I am not looking forward to, and that is this new film that is in the works for the UFC in Saudi Arabia with Zack Snyder. It is a film called Brawler. Now, Zack Snyder will be the writer and director of this film. He's going to co-write with Shai Hatton and Kirk Johnston. And it's gonna be about a guy, a young fighter, who gets a shot at a UFC championship, battling his inner demons as he fights for redemption. In other words, it'll be a surface-level, moody, emo dude who's got a rough past, maybe probably military or something, but they're probably just gonna speedrun Warrior, for Christ's sake, from Tom Hardy's perspective. They're gonna take that character, Tommy's perspective, you know, the whole I was in combat, I went AWOL, and you know, now I'm angry and pissed off the world. It could be that. They might just rip all that off verbatim as I'm joking right here. But I know there's probably gonna be a lot of unnecessary slow-mo and just not very well-written characters, so... But again, it's just weird that Saudi Arabia is pairing up with the UFC and Zack Snyder to bring a MMA movie. There's not been a whole lot of those. I mean, Never Back Down went straight to streaming or video. Wasn't very good. I didn't watch a single one of them. Warrior was fantastic. But yeah, not a whole lot of MMA movies. I'm sure it will get a lot of those, you know, Affliction Bros out there to watch it. And then Snyder Bros will watch it because it's going to be cool and dark. But I'll wait for that to hit Tubi and watch it there. So, yeah, you know, I don't know. I don't know who would be the lead. You know, I mean, it doesn't matter. But I'm not looking forward to it. But I just wanted you guys to know that it's coming. And it's a weird hodgepodge of people. So there's that. And a news that surprises no one who is chronically online or looks at this stuff a lot. Snow White, the live action adaption, is not doing so well. Not doing so well at all. A lot of people have a lot to say about Rachel Zellweger and her comments about Free Palestine. And, you know, producers apparently flew over to her to tell her to, hey, keep your mouth shut so we can try to make money. And other people are mad that she said stuff. And they're like, yeah, my dad had to go tell her, stop being a loser and talking, you know, be an actress and say nothing and just meh. And, you know, let's go with the fact that co-star Gal Gadot was a member of the Israeli Defense Force. So that's kind of awkward, I'm sure. And they probably don't get along at all. But this is not what I'm here to talk about, though. IMDb has issued a warning that says, our rating mechanism has detected unusual voting activity on this title, because a lot of right-wing people are a lot of upset with Rachel Zellweger's comments about how the prince is kind of creepy and the original story is weird when you look at it in, you know, modern context. All this stuff that makes a lot of those people very unhappy, and a lot of grifters out there are review bombing. Now, review bombing is nothing new. I mean, hell, every movie, any big movie at some point is going to get review bombed. Like, I'm sure Marvel movies, the Marvels, if we're going to throw out an example, was review bombed. Assassin's Creed Shadows probably was review bombed. That's a video game, though. But yeah, this is, review bombing happens to any major motion picture that comes out in the last decade or so, or if there's something that somebody doesn't like for whatever reason. But I just thought that was interesting because this is a rare thing that they do. They don't really throw out these kind of warnings all that often. So that's fairly interesting to see. I don't plan on seeing the movie. I know this movie is reviewed very critically. It's got a 1.6 out of 10 on IMDb, if you're curious. You know, Rotten Tomatoes has it. I gotta say Rotten Tomatoes as if I'm high flutin'. I don't know why I threw an accent on that. Don't judge me. But, you know, the film score for this movie has a high ranking of 73% out of 1,000. But, you know, it's hit or miss. I mean, reviews, like, basically like Rotten Tomatoes or IMDb or any aggregator, is that just that? They're an aggregation. They're not definitive things. That should not be the basis on how you view a film, but box office numbers for this film aren't very good. In that second week, it grossed $14.2 million with a 66% drop. And, it came in second behind A Working Man, the Jason Statham film. You know, it's a lot of things going against this film. And to be honest with you, controversy aside, live action adaptions of classic Disney's films just need to stop. We don't need them. We have the they're classics for a reason. They still have drawing power. Let us have those. You don't need to remake everything. Like Mufasa. Mufasa was a dumb live-action prequel remake to do. Because we don't need it. We don't need a prequel. And the fact they made him adopted is another weird thing, too. Because in the first animated film, they talk about how he comes from a long line of kings. It's his bloodline. So, like, what's this whole thing about adoption? And, you know, not really being from a royal bloodline doesn't seem to make sense. I don't plan on seeing that movie either. But I just thought this was rather interesting that IMDb had to throw out a warning that unusual activity is happening on this film. So there's that little news in case you're wondering. From children's stories to rather adult entertainment, Kevin Smith has announced that Dogma will be returning to theaters for its 25-year anniversary. And along for this re-release of Dogma, he will be doing a Q&A special at certain stops, one of those being Tampa, Florida itself. I hope I can find myself at that screening, because I would love to hear Kevin Smith talk about it, and I would love to ask him a few questions about said movie. For those of you who are not aware of what Dogma is, Dogma was a comedy about two angels banished from heaven for irresponsible decisions, and they found a way to re-enter heaven in a loophole, and to prevent them, a young lady, along with Jay and Silent Bob, must stop them. And after that, a lot of hijinks ensues. You know, there was even protest for the movie, one of which Kevin Smith showed up to protest his film because he thought it'd be funny, and a news crew even interviewed him. He talks about it on An Evening with Kevin Smith. It's pretty hilarious. The movie is hilarious itself. I think it's Matt Damon and Ben Affleck's best work ever. You know, them playing two discast angels from heaven, forced to live out their days in Wisconsin. That's pretty funny. Also, though, in Kevin Smith or Jay and Silent Bob news, they're doing a Archie meets Jay and Silent Bob comic book series. That in itself sounds hilarious. I know they've done wacky stuff like that. I mean, Archie's met Kiss Predator, I think. I don't know if that's actually a gag thing I've seen or if that's a legitimate one. I probably should have done more research about it, but I am not a professional, so we're just gonna go with yeah, it did happen. But yeah, Archie is going to meet Jay and Silent Bob. It's going to be written by Kevin Smith with art by Fernando Ruiz, Rich Kowalski, Matt Herms, and Jack Morelli. So that'll be very interesting. I might just pick it up out of the morbid curiosity. God, why do I feel like, you know, Archie's going to do a callback to Clerks? I'm not going to mention what the callback would be, but if you've seen it, you might know where I'm getting at. How many did you? Never mind. Anyway, nonetheless, that's happening. Hopefully, again, I can make it to the 25th anniversary screening for that when it comes to my town. And if not, then I guess I'll just sit at home and watch it and be bumped. I don't know. Daredevil Born Again, Episode 7, Art for Art's Sake. Man, this show keeps just getting better and better. I was a little worried, like most people, when it was announced that Marvel was doing a Daredevil show. And they said it was going to be a reboot, then they changed their mind and said it's going to be a soft reboot, but continuing from the Netflix Daredevil series. And they delivered on that so far, but this episode was really, really good. We get a little bit more about Muse and why he's doing the things he's doing, and Matt Murdock's struggle, obviously, with the fact that he has returned as Daredevil, but also the fact that his girlfriend, Heather, is a therapist. And she's picking up on things. Matt's acting a little differently this past episode, or a couple of days in story terms. So you know how he's gonna keep up the lie, and how is he gonna keep others from figuring out that he's Daredevil again, the ones that are close to him that are asking a lot of questions. But no, man, it just keeps getting better and better. A part of me wants to get spoilery, but another part of me wants you all to enjoy it for yourselves, and then I'll come back eventually and give a full season in-depth spoiler talk. I think I might do that. Actually, I'm going to give it till after the season finale, and then, you know, we'll give it a month after the season finale, and then I will give you a full-blown review with every single tiny detail and what my thoughts are and all those things, but man, this season is really, really good. This show is really, really good. It lives up to the hype and the plead that it should keep within the tone of the Netflix Daredevil series. Granted, it's a little bit lighter in some aspects because it is Marvel, but no, it gets dark and gritty still. It's still a bit dark, even for Marvel. And in saying that, it's kind of weird too, because again, the Netflix series was technically still in the Marvel universe. It's just that Feige and the movies never acknowledged them. But like, you know, they were, but they kind of weren't. But now they're there properly in the fold. Another interesting thing I saw, though, was that Vincent D'Onofrio said that the Kingpin character is not allowed to be in movies in the MCU. I might look into that soon to see if maybe there's some sort of rights agreement with Fox or whoever owns the rights theatrically for Daredevil as why Kingpin can't be in a film. Because that sounds really weird, but I mean, hey, it's good we have him in the show. That could be also a red herring. You never know, because I mean, Daredevil did show up in Spider-Man No Way Home. So if he could show up in the movies, like, why can't Kingpin be in a movie himself? I don't know, but if Vincent D'Onofrio is to be believed, then that's interesting that he can only be in Marvel television shows and not movies. And then a final piece of news that I swear I had to look at the date to believe it, because if I didn't, I would have swore it was an April Fool's article. Creator of Black Mirror, Charlie Brooker, has promised that this season will be far more emotive and vulnerable than longtime viewers are accustomed to. It will be less dystopia. And a part of his quote, this is really interesting to me, he said, "I'd say there's a little less dystopia. If you want that, there's a 24-hour panel showing. It's called Your Window. You don't necessarily want to see something saying things are going to get worse," which is pretty funny considering the fact that this show gets pretty damn dark at times. I haven't watched it all, but, you know, from what I have watched, yeah, it leaves me a little broken inside, if I were to be honest with you. You know, gotta probably watch some cartoons or something to make me feel a lot better about myself and the state of the world, but nonetheless. Season 7's coming, and there's gonna be a sequel episode from a fan-favorite episode from Season 4 called USS Callister, so that'll be fun for those of you who are diehard Black Mirror fans. But I think that about wraps it up for this week. We're going to be coming back very, very soon with a 90s watch-along. The Dubetney Five, Aaron Nova, and Caden Green, and myself will come together to watch Double Dragon for our 90s watch-along. Every episode that is a 90s watch-along, we will spin the wheel, and then we will pick a new film to watch. But I spun the wheel once, and that was the first one that came, so that's what we're doing. Also, coming up in the near future, Spooky Pookie Theater. Caden Green and myself will be watching Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the movie, and The Craft. I guess we could say the Spooky Pookie Theater will be comedy horror meshed blends of films, if I were to put a descriptor on it. I guess I say that because, you know, The Craft is pretty dark yet funny, and Buffy the Vampire Slayer is pretty funny yet has horror or supernatural elements to it. So what better way than to call it Spooky Pookie Theater, which pretty much fits into Caden Green's gimmick. He's spooky, but he's funny. Nonetheless, thank you all for tuning in. You can find me at TheJCVega on all social media platforms. Please support your boy by going there or also going to ProWrestlingTees.com and buying some of my merchandise. We got one shirt that says Punk Rock, another that says Rainbow Bright. It's a quote from our friend, Nicole Perkins. Thanks a lot. Buy my merch. Support the show at Vegas World Pod on Instagram. You can email us for questions, recommendations, or what have you at VegasWorldPodcast@gmail.com. I am JC Vega. Thank you all. Good morning, good evening, good night. Party on.